Yes, you are, because you are a glutton for lots of news and lots of things we like to call entertainment. We combine those two together. And what do we like to call them, Andrew?
Newstame.
Newstame. And here comes Sherry. Wow, she's a good voice. Sing it, girl.
It's crazy.
Crazy. Do it, girl. Do it.
But it's true. Oh.
She's dressed like a flight attendant.
Between the moon and New York City.
Now she starts throwing peanuts around for those of you that aren't able to watch.
That you can do.
Hit it. Boom,
the best that you can do. It's falling if you get caught between the moon.
Not the way the original was written, but man, she makes it her own. Hey, Sherry.
Wow. I'm so glad you like that arrangement, because I was kind of, I wasn't sure at first if I could do that.
It's
but
a
yeah, but I think.
You made it your own.
Thanks. I like it that way.
Let's dive in. Dive in.
Okay.
Ooh, head rush. All right. I checked Boeing stock today. Ooh, yoy, yoy. Although, you know, they say 5 years, 10 years, it's all going to come back again. 38, 40, 60% return. So buy it on the downslide right now. You can pick up your Boeing stock for $182 a share, Sherry.
It's a good deal.
Bonds are still covered in investors. Yeah. Rye had to do a, he's taking an economics class over there at Central. So you had to talk about a stock. So he picked Boeing. And then he said, so why is it still good? I said, because it still talks about, you got to look at butts in seats, the number of people that are going to be flying on airplanes as the rest of the world moves from poor to middle class, or at least people have more money and will be traveling more. As the population increases, more people will be flying, so therefore they'll have more seats. You need more airplanes, so Boeing will be okay. This is a really, really rough time for Boeing, especially with the last news that came out today or yesterday. Anyway, Boeing promises changes after the poor government audit. And by the way, we will get to the story of the whistleblower found dead from a parent suicide. I say that because all these people are like, well, this seems really suspicious. But here's what's happening.
The audit was spawned by that Alaska Airlines flight incident, and that audit has found major issues in the manufacturing process of the 737s that you see on the flight line here. We now have learned that, according to the New York Times, company executives say Boeing is going to take remedial steps here, and that means they're going to work with each employee that is noted with noncompliance so that they can ensure that they understand working instructions and procedures. Now, after the door blowout in January, the FAA launched this audit. 33 of 89 sections in the production process Boeing failed. That included the one with the door paneling. The FAA also found 97 incidents of alleged non-compliance. And this audit is happening after Boeing admitted to lawmakers within the last week that it can't find paperwork documenting the alleged repair performed on that Alaska Airlines door panel, saying it likely was never created.
It wasn't just paperwork issues. Sometimes it's order that work is done. Sometimes it's tool management, so it's really plant floor hygiene, if you will, and a variety of issues of that nature.
That's not just Boeing. Spirit Aerosystems out of Kansas also coming under scrutiny. It makes the 737 MAX's body, and the company failed 7 of 13 sections of the audit of its manufacturing process. Now, in my time reporting on this out here, we've often run into mechanics coming to work in the morning who have said Spirit Aerosystems definitely takes some blame for this from their perspective. We also should note Boeing is going to add weekly compliance checks for all teams working here in Renton, working on these 737 jets.
Wow. It's a cultural problem, because I was listening to part of the video testimony that the whistleblower in South Carolina, who retired in 2017, has been wrapped up in a series of legal cases against Boeing. He was talking about when he would go in there and check the stuff, he would find all these problems. He would report these problems, and he said it was continuation of these problems. And then they sent another inspector, and she only found a few. And he thought, well, that seems sort of weird that she was only able to find a few of these things. But it's a morale thing. Like, if you're like, I don't care, they don't care about me, I don't care about them, and then do you try as hard? Spirit used to be part of Boeing, and then they broke off. They're on their own in Kansas. They also make parts for Airbus. And the other part that people are like, well, that's kind of weird. So the FAA said, hey, show us the video. They've got a video cameras on the floor, so you can see who's doing the work. And Boeing said, yeah, we don't have that video anymore. We get rid of it after 30 days. So It's not like some missing material that was going to suddenly point fingers at someone. But Boeing, again, it's that old adage, you know, you get bad news or any news at all, you're supposed to, especially bad news, you say, okay, good. Okay. How's this going to change and what's going to change?
How much do you think this has affected the average passenger? I read a thing the other day that said, if it's Boeing, are you going? Do you think anybody's checking to find out if they're flying on a Boeing aircraft?
Yeah, I bet some people are. Now, whether they change their flight as, you know, they get online, they book their flight through Expedia or some other source to get their flight, or maybe they go directly to Alaska. If you're going to fly with Alaska Airlines, you're most likely going to be flying on a Boeing jet. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's some people out there that, you know, read all the directions and don't stand on the top ladder, step of a ladder. Those are the ones. But I always look at it, just statistically speaking, the chances of something bad happening again, it doesn't affect me at all. It doesn't stop me from, I'm going to cancel that flight and get on an Airbus instead. Do you? I mean, you're kind of a sissy when it comes to all this stuff. Okay, yeah.
I am. But no.
I mean sissy, no.
I mean, if you look at the statistics, look at how many Boeing flights are just fine every day.
Yes,
there is,
exactly.
You know, there are cases where there's been tragic endings, but the overwhelming majority of these jets are okay and perform well every day.
Yes, exactly. I tried to see... try to find some statistics the other day on Airbus maintenance problems and Airbus problems compared to compared to the Boeing jets. I couldn't find anything on it. I probably could have looked harder and found more, but I needed to move on to other stuff. So, it doesn't stop me, but I'm sure some people. Plus, also, it really gets down to when these guys start canceling, which United Airlines said, you know what, don't make another one. Hold off. We're going to make the decision whether we want to go with Airbus or with Boeing. Because, you know, the guys that buy these things, Southwest is hurt the most because they've had to ground a number of them, and they have most amount of their orders in for those, for the Boeing 737, 9 or 10, whichever they're buying. So, but I think it primarily comes from the buyer of the plane first, and they're addressing all these issues. It may be best that it all hits with a giant, you know, splat as opposed to, you know, trickling out where the news is not on it as much and Boeing doesn't feel the pressure to you know, alleviate the problems as much if it was a smaller stuff. But it's big things like, you know, landing gear and then the door and some other things like that. It just puts more pressure on Boeing and the FAA getting in there and wanting them to be more responsible to their sort of checks and balances that are supposed to be in place. So, and that leads to the Boeing whistleblower. So this guy was found in the parking lot in his pickup truck at a hotel, and it looked like it was a single gunshot wound to the head, and now people are starting to go, like they talked, his attorney talked to him, I think, the night before, and he was in good spirits, didn't seem as if he was all suicidal, didn't say that he said it was a normal conversation between himself and his client, no indication there was any sort of distress other than the normal stress this guy has been in under since he, you know, blew the whistle. So now people rush in and start speculating.
Joseph Scott Morgan is here. He's a certified death investigator, a forensic analyst, and a distinguished scholar of the stuff at Jacksonville State University. Okay, so Joe, if you shoot yourself in the head, your hand and the gunshot residue and the blood spatter and the trajectory, all that will tell the story, won't it?
Understand this. The people that investigate suicides, this primarily falls to the coroner, the medical examiner. This is not necessarily a crime. So I find it interesting that the coroner has already stated that this is a self-inflicted gunshot. Unless the police can come up with more evidence that this was, in fact, something that was done at another's hand, then they're probably going to go with the conclusions of the coroner. Right now, the police are waiting on that final conclusion.
So there's a letter, they said, that was found in the seat beside him, and they're not releasing any details of that, which I also find unusual, because wouldn't you want to quell any of this internet frenzy by saying the letter was very clear? Help me understand, as a death investigator, Is it frequent that there's a letter written under duress, a suicide letter written under duress? And can you tell?
Let's back up just a second. First off, suicide notes typically are atypical. I think people are surprised by that. You generally do not find a suicide note. When people decide to take their life, they do it in a second most of the time. We in the medical legal community investigate probably at a rate of 2 to 3 suicides for every homicide. Suicides outpace homicides by that factor in this country. So we have a lot of experience at this. But one of the things they're going to be doing, if this was a handwritten note, is that they're going to have exemplars. And this is typical what we do, to look and see how this compares to his handwriting. Now, as to whether or not there was stress involved in this, if it was something that he was forced to do, that's going to have to take it up to a different level. Probably the FBI would get involved in that.
Hmm. All right, so I looked up, if you are a whistleblower, and they did a study of 233 whistleblowers in the United States, 90% of them lost their jobs or were demoted. 20% had difficulties with alcohol. 20% had long-term relationship breakups. 20% were threatened with defamation suits. 6% attempted suicide, more than the general public. And 9% went bankrupt. So think about all this pressure that is on somebody that whistleblows, especially if you're going to whistleblow like Boeing, right? Mm-hmm. I can't imagine the emotional strain it must put on you and your family if you decide you're going to do that, because you know what it's going to affect so many people that you may or may not know, but also the corporations you work for and just the stress you're under. So, you know, hopefully they give us the information, you get it out there, and people don't sort of find little bits and pieces that they go on Reddit and start talking about, well, I heard that the gun was this and that, and they, you know, the talk about the residue of the gun with the sulfur and all the other stuff that comes out of the back of the thing, and what, where was it on his hand? You know, people will be digging into this one for a while, but it's not unusual, because you look up whistleblower suicide, man, the list goes on for quite some time, that not only in the United States, but in other countries as well. So it certainly would seem to sort of fit the MO or the mindset of somebody that's been a whistleblower. 6% have attempted suicide. Again, that's higher than the general average population. Well,
keep in mind, though, this was not the only thing going on in his life. I mean, he may have had other extenuating circumstances that were painful or dramatic or something that led, in combination with this, led to that. It just seems a little suspect that the day before, especially because his attorney did say there was nothing that he felt indicated that he was on the edge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a phone call, who knows how well the guy was able to sort of hide his emotions. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that still swirls around, and we have the time. Yes, good. My favorite story, which is, of course, HOV lanes. And the HOV lane is back in the news again, because 2 decades and $1 billion later, Tacoma's HOV lanes are filled with scofflaws?
That's what it says.
How about drivers willing to risk the fine? So here's the history of HOV. First of all, it started during World War II. It was like, you know, ride with a friend and save your American, you save the troops. So it was because they were rationing gas and stuff. So they started out with that. Then in 1970, they started with these HOV ideas. And the idea was that you're going to get in the car with somebody and you're going to share the driving. So there's two different types of driving that goes into this thing. So you actually have those people that are in driving natural carpools. That's where you and I are both going to work together. So it's not like, or we're married, Sherry. Imagine that.
we need a few more lanes for when we pushed each other.
So we're married. We're both driving. we're both driving. That's a natural carpool. Hey, let's go to the store. I'll go buy you something pretty for yourself, right? So that's you and me driving. That's a natural. Then there's the induced carpool. The induced carpool is the thing that doesn't happen. It's dropped from 14% down to 8%. People do not say, hey, Bob, you want a carpool together? Because the idea is Bob's not in his car. That's one less car driving. So That doesn't happen. So people just do the math on the thing and say, okay, I can drive for a certain amount of time and I get fined $186. My insurance could go up, but I'll take the risk. How many troopers are out there? And I'll just, you know, gamble it on this thing and get in that lane and save myself.
When they did a study, they found that about a third of the drivers on a regular day are using the HOV lanes illegally. They're alone in their cars. And when they came up with these HOV lanes, they didn't care about enforcement. That's not part of the strategy. That's not part of the plan. They're saying it's the Washington State Patrol that is responsible for enforcement. Well, they say, look, we're down 25%. We don't have a lot of people out there to make to do enforcement when we're trying to find speeders and drunk drivers and all of this stuff. So what they're trying to do to get more Washington State's patrols is they're asking for a longevity bonus. And if you've been in 26 years or more, they'll give you $15,000 per year that you will stay on.
That's just not to catch people driving in the HOV lane. That's because they have a dearth of state troopers, right? It's got to
be that. I just figured if they were of an age that that type of duty would be easier. Maybe that's part of it.
You'd have to be doing. You can't just be specializing in it. In 1976 in L.A., they did an HOV lane. People were so mad they threw tacks down on the road. And I think within about 4 weeks, they got rid of the HOV lane and gave it back to the people. I'll tell you, Todd Herman, who used to be over here at Cairo, he used to fight these things all the time and intentionally would drive in the HOV lane and intentionally, or with great intention and great joy, he used to get tickets and then he would always fight them. So he's not a lawyer, but he does give advice on how to get out of the things. So I saved that. Is that a tease?
That's a tease.
Is that a tease? Okay, I guess it is.
It's an incomplete tease, if you ask me.
I stopped her. She pulled it in. Here we go with the John Curley, Sherry Elliker show. There's Teeny. Teeny is in the running again for Employee of the Week. She has 17 votes, Sherry. You have... You're doing all right, Sherry. Don't worry about it.
But, okay.
Thank you. Good job, Teeny. Well, she does more backslapping, walks around, says hi to everybody, and offers to do their dishes. So that's how she gets in there. But anyway, it's fourth time in a row she's going to win Employee of the Week here at Cairo. Let's go to the story about the bald eagle. So the bald eagle, they've got a camera in there. The eagle has laid, three or four eggs or something like that. And do you have the sad news for the condition of the eggs and what we're hoping for that might not be coming true for all of us?
Well, unfortunately for Jackie and Shadow, the mom and dad, it doesn't look like the eggs are viable at this point. Now, this is not unusual. Apparently, only about 50% of eggs actually get hatched by bald eagles. Uh-huh. And one of the things they think might be a factor is that their nest is at the highest altitude that possible, I guess. And they think that the altitude, the low percentage of oxygen, all of that could have contributed to this. And they're also saying that Jackie's 12, Shadow's 10, they live 39 years. So they are well within the range of being able to do this again. The camera that was there, the bald eagle, the watch camera, got about 40,000 views.
Mm-hmm. Not as good as the panda cam that was going on, I think, over the Washington University. Was it
National
Zoo?
Yeah,
National Zoo. Everybody was digging in on that one. Mm-hmm. That's 40,000 views to see how the eagle's doing. I'm sure they probably had it set up in schools and stuff like that. So, well, they still have another chance. So what happens to those eggs? Probably something really gross, like something just nature would, they'd go, well, I guess that's it. Let's eat the babies. I'm sure that, don't you think they just sort of finish them off?
They didn't say, but I wonder if they go and, so there's not other predators that get the eggs. I wonder if they go and
we're going live now,
them.
Joe.
Okay.
There it is.
Eagle
it's radio,
camp.
Folks. Yeah. radio. So
she's still sitting there like a champ. Good mama.
Okay. Thank you, Joe. Somebody texted, who's the homeless guy sitting there by himself in the studio?
Stop. It's lonely in here, man.
It's your hat on. You're all wrapped up in rags.
Joe's cool. He wears cool stuff.
Okay, thank you, Sherry.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thank you, Sherry. Okay. A little history. By the way, you know, it was Ben Franklin that hated the eagle. It didn't think it should have been the bird for the United States. Did you know that?
No. Did he have an alternative?
Well, hit the music, Andrew. Well, here we go. Well, it was Charles Thompson. He was the treasurer of the Continental Congress, Sherry, and he was also an artist. And they needed a seal for the new country, so he drew the eagle. Ben Franklin sent a letter to his daughter back in 1784 and said, I think this is a horrible idea. The eagle has got questionable morals and bad character. The eagle shouldn't represent the United States. The eagle waits for some other bird to get something, and then it comes hopping over there and basically steals it from everybody else. That's not what the United States is about. We need the turkey. He said the turkey would be much better, because the turkey is fearless and would attack redcoats, and just a better choice for the country would be a big turkey as opposed to an eagle. But still, the eagle ended up being the symbol for the United States, and Charles Thompson, an Irish guy from Philadelphia, prevails.
And now you know the rest of the story.
But turkeys are so gross, they're so ugly, that the eagle is so much more regal, don't you think?
It's only because you've seen it more. You know, what kind of turkey are you talking about? Like the one you look at on the table with the...
No, I don't think he meant a cooked turkey. I think he meant a regular, unless, which would not be a bad idea.
Well, how many live turkeys have you seen?
Oh, you see them every Thanksgiving, and they're not
very attractive. Listen, AI now, they could dress them all up and make them look better and stuff like that. Besides, it's easier to draw them. You just take your hand, and then you like sketch it out, and you do the finger, you know, and then you go up around, and that whole thing there. Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, giant turkey.
There's a
giant
vote for
turkey.
It.
Giant turkey if you were to do it. So anyway, that's the no hatching from those eggs. Look up, Joe. Look up what you got time there. In between waiting for a free meal somewhere, look up to see what will they do with the eggs. I wonder if they kick them out of the nest or throw them out, or they go get a new nest. They start all over again and leave those things behind, or somebody else comes and gets them. But mom will sit on them for a little bit longer. And finally, for dogs, and the good news is, yes, dogs reduce stress. If you have a dog, you will reduce your stress. You'll live longer. The dog gives you all sorts of stuff that you don't normally get from anybody else, which is really unconditional love. But watch out if your dog does like to eat. In this particular case, the dog has been gone through surgery because the family was shocked to find out the dog ate 133 coins. Oh, this has to be in England. Mm-hmm. Yeah, in England, right? Who else has 133 coins? Where was he getting them? In the couch cushions or something?
They never said where he found them. It was a Bichon Frise, and he had an obstruction in his stomach. And they went in and they said it's not that unusual for a dog to pick up a quarter or, you know, a little bit of change every once in a while. But there were 133 of these. Now, clearly the owners have to know where they keep this stash of coins. So they said they had no idea. Well, I've no idea what Charlie got.
Wow.
And they was eating them and not pooping them out. That's the other thing. So it wasn't like a slot machine.
No, and the vet said it's probably only been in him for about a day or two, because otherwise things would have gotten really bad.
We, Mandy, the little named after Mandy Rice Davies, who was like a Miss America pageant winner like 1970 or something. My mother got a dachshund, and Mandy ate everything. I mean, she was a garbage disposal of just anything that she could swallow. Balloons, stuff like that. And the day she ate, because I had filled my sister's Barbie head with dog food, and then fed the Barbie head with the dog food in it to Mandy, and Mandy ate it and then pooped it out. And then my brother and I danced around the pile of poop with the Barbie head in it to torture my sister.
What is the other interesting story about you and Mandy?
Heard it. Oh. Move on.
I have not heard.
My brother caught me singing the song Mandy to Mandy in my parents' room one afternoon. She was sitting on the bed, probably just finished eating something, and I was singing because I liked Mandy. I mean, I didn't love her, but I liked the song. And I thought, well,
all my life, raining down as cold as ice.
Manny's looking at me like, face through a window, crying in the night.
Now, were you cradling her when
I'm in the middle of it, Sherry.
Oh, sorry.
Happy people pass my way.
I had a higher voice back then.
Looking in their eyes, I see a memory.
My brother walks in and goes, what are you doing? What are you doing? Oh, my God, are you a loser? I'm like, what? I could sing to Mandy.
Oh, Mandy, you kiss me and stop me from shaking.
Oh, you didn't know the words then either.
I had the 45.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm surprised, being the dancer that you are, that you didn't pick up Mandy and do a little
she had little
dance
legs,
with her.
She was very heavy. Very heavy.
Oh. All those coins she ate.
Oh, a lot of food. Look at Barbies and balloons. Yeah. She was like that thing at the Chuck E. Cheese. You put the chits in and then like a toy comes out.
What? I beg your pardon. What do you put in?
Chits, like little tickets.
Can you stop saying that word, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, Andrew.
Say it 10 times fast. Go.
No. So exciting here in the tiny house, Sherry. Balls are coming in. Trying to do everything here. Doing everything but selling tickets, as they say.
Mm.
Thanks for remembering that I sang Mandy to my dog. Thank you for that.
Yes, I remember all your stories. Each time you talk about them.
Heard it, move on! it is okay still to moon a train in Australia. I don't know if anybody would enforce this anywhere else, but apparently there's a place that people like to drop trow whenever the train.
The sun might still be shining, but the territory's full moon is on full display.
Okay, just stop. I've understood two words. Did you get any of that? Am I the only one?
Full display.
What was the first part? What was the first part?
The sun's still shining, but the full moon is on full display.
Okay.
The sun might still be shining, but the territory's full moon is on full display.
Okay, got it. All right, tuned in. Got it.
Why did you come down today?
Not a bad day to flesh a bum.
Is there anyone you would really like to moon?
My daughter.
I'd love to moon Prince Charles. Idea, see what he thinks about my freckle.
One of my mates posted on Facebook it was going to be a world record attempt, so just thought it'd be funny and a good laugh.
For me, the old Scottish kilt came in rather handy, as I joined the ranks of the Nunama Moonies to give top-end tourists a little more than they bargained for. A cheers to top-end visitors from the bottom end of its residents.
We've never had a train in Darwin, you know, and then it come up the tracks and everyone's like, oh, you can see the train, like, you know. And now it's, what is it, 20 years on?
If it seems a bit ridiculous, that's because it is, but it's a tradition some territorians hold dear.
See the sign, yeah, that was the original one.
Gan tourists tend to be treated to a full moon every time.
Yeah, I would do that. Wouldn't you do that if you're down there, get involved in that? That's like an Evening Magazine story right there.
Sure. Although I don't think they got the whole Guinness World Book of Records thing going. The video that you see with this, there's about 20 people. And they won't do it again for another 10 years.
Why not?
I know. If you're going to do this, make it a tradition at least every year or every time the train goes by.
Yeah, at least have somebody down there doing it.
Doing it, yeah. They're called the Nunama Moonies.
That was a big deal for a while there when I was in high school and going through Wendy's and, you know, it was called pressed ham. You know what that is?
Yes.
Yeah, you just pull your pants down, you press your butt up against the window. You don't put the window down. And you just, you know, somebody does it. They climb into the back seat and then pressed ham as you're going into the Wendy's and the poor person working there is like, do you want your Frosty? Do you want a Frosty? It's the funniest thing.
That's when America used to be fun.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody cares.
Okay, well, they just shoot you. Sherry, have you ever mooned anybody?
No, but I was in California on a vacation, and I wanted to have this picture. I had this really cute little bathing suit on and everything, and it was before cell phones. And so I was there, and I was, like, posing on the beach and all these different little poses. And the two guys that were with us, every single picture in the background is them mooning. Kind of showed me, didn't it?
You got moon bombed.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, like, when somebody goes to all the trouble to do it, like, the reaction of the person that's been mooned is always like, huh? Like, I know. So?
Gross. It's
like, that's not even great. Just like, okay. It's not like, got you. Oh, I gave up looking at people's rear ends for Lent. It's like it's a big devastating effect on anybody. Mostly it's the people planning it, doing it. They get more of a joy out of it than the person going, oh, there's your rear end. All right.
Yeah. They think the shock value is going to be worth it, and it's still real shock value. It's like, are you done? Good.
Good.
All right. Zip it up.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe go around the other way. What's the other side? That one is a moon. What's the other one called? You flipped around the other way.
I don't know that has a name, does it?
Yeah,
well, a sexual offense, I think.
Yeah, okay, that's fine. Thank you, Joe.
10 to 20.
Yep. Well done. All right, go over to
Uranus.
Go over to Nick. Okay,
Nate. Uranus.
Okay, you know what? That might fly on some of those other shows you're involved in. Okay, right here, this place is sacred space. You got it?
Yeah.